We are so happy to have you here. We know that your South by time is valuable, and we really appreciate you choosing to spend it with us. I'm Megan Warby. My Twitter handle is Without a Yard. I am the community manager for the province of Ontario between the hours of 9 to 5, and like a good bureaucrat, at 5 o'clock, I say yabba-dabba-doo and slide down the back of a Tyrannosaurus Rex or Brontosaurus or whatever that was in the opening credits, and I work with the lovely Shereen Barsoom at Tazza Media and also with the lovely Dorothy Engelman at Get Involved in Wellspring, and the loveliest of them all, Rob Dyer at Escape for Cancer. So I'm your moderator and host today. I'm going to try not to gobble up too much airtime. The emphasis of today's talk is social change, documentary film, and social media, and how social media can actually be a really great method to leverage social awareness and affect change. In light of all of the incredibly intelligent people in this room today, we're not going to set aside time at the end for Q&A, but ask that when the spirit moves you, please shoot up a hand. And these lovely volunteers in South by red volunteer t-shirts are happy to give you a microphone. Please don't yell out a question unless you have a microphone. You need that conch because they're recording it for a podcast. And that said, I don't know if I have any other housekeeping items. This is our designated South by hashtag. Please use it when you're speaking about the film on Twitter, or about the panel, rather, on Twitter, and only good things. If you want to say bad things, don't use the hashtag. And without further ado, I'm going to play a very brief mini trailer clip that we assembled to give you guys an idea of what we mean when we mean documentary film, social media, and social change.
They said if the world finds out what goes on here, we'll be shut down.
They were hiding something.
And of course, as soon as I entered the brothels, I met the children. That's when I thought it would be really great to teach them and to see this world through their eyes.
You pick up a shoe now, you have the story of globalization in your hand.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been 40 years since my last confession.
The way we eat has changed more in the last 50 years than in the previous 10,000.
The industry doesn't want you to know the truth about what you're eating, because if you knew, you might not want to eat it.
So the Bully Project takes us into the lives of five families that are dealing in very different ways with bullying over the course of one school year. This will make us better. Like, this will be a mirror that we can't see ourselves.
It's absolutely critical to ensure that our taxpaying dollars aren't supporting and funding this genocide.
Now you have seen what Katrina has done to us. She stuck us in the attic. I'm running out of juice too.
Our ability to live is what is at stake.
Now, evolution did not end with us growing thumbs. And the reason our institutions, our traditional religions are all crumbling is because they're no longer relevant.
What I really want to do is to be able to change the lives of a group of people with the same material that they deal with every day.
Listen, you can't link our food to these girls being sick. You can't link our food to these girls being obese. Our food is healthy, it's nutritious, it's good for you.
And I'm like, well, is that good for me? And realistically, shouldn't I be able to eat it for 30 days straight with no side effects?
Yay! Let's just watch YouTube videos. So we hope that at least some of those documentaries featured in that copyright-infringing montage are familiar to you guys. But right now, we'd like to know, before we launch into our respective bios, a little bit more about you, so we can tailor our talk to suit your needs and your interests. If you had to pick one of the following three categories, where would you fit by a show of hands? Do you consider yourself an artist, an activist, or an entrepreneur? So let's hear it for the artists first.
Ooh.
Amazing.
Excellent.
Okay, we like you. Let's hear it for the activists. Yes. Awesome. Bless your hearts. Okay. And finally, the entrepreneurs. You make stuff go. Thank you for being entrepreneurs. Okay, so it seems like a relatively nice mix of people here. And it might be helpful if when you're giving us questions that you give us a mini view into where you fit into those categories. So what is this panel made up of? What might be helpful for you guys is after each of the panelists gives their bio, I show you a clip, a trailer from Shireen's film. We're going to see an example from one of Rob's films where he was the subject, and then finally one of Dorothy's pieces that she did with Q Media. So, Shireen.
Hi, my name is Shireen Barsoom. I'm a documentary filmmaker, and I just wrapped up a really intensive month. February was Black History Month in Canada, as it is here as well. And my film, Color Me, explores race and identity. And so I just came off of, 50 screenings and Q&As, and a really great time of engaging with audiences about race, identity, and what it means to be the particular culture or race or background that you are. Before I got into filmmaking, I was a youth worker, and that is largely what drove me to make the film Color Me, because it explores it from the perspective of six young people. So it's really youth-driven as well. And I found that to be, for the folks in the room who are activists and artists, and I think in those three categories, there's so much overlap. And you can be an artist and an activist and an entrepreneur all at the same time, and I kind of feel that's where I fit in. I'm all three categories. And I found that really my personal motivation to make this film came from my background in youth work. So that's a little bit of who I am, and I think we'll see the trailer for Color Me.
You know, it's the PE town, boy. You know what it is. I'm going to take your bitch, and I'm going to slap the nigga.
We're seeing youth that live in nice homes, and they're not living in the ghetto. They're not living in the hood.
It's for black folks. That means you must stop fighting.
But they have a ghetto mind state.
You know what he called me? He said I was whitewashed.
They said, Mom, if we play rugby, we'll be the ball.
Every time I say, we as black people, I'm always like, you guys cool with that? Is that all right? Am I in the club?
What kind of jokes do people make?
You're so dark, you look like tar.
Oh, you're having a white moment.
Well, you didn't even do our normal thing, Doc.
You're so ghetto. I'm from Brampton, I'm a political kid. You're not. This is flower town.
The brand new racists, they have black friends. But to the brand new racists, if you are not ghetto, then you are not black.
How do you know you're black?
How do I know I'm black? Because I look black.
There's no country called Black Media, and then you come from there and you're black.
Thank you for the world, so sweet.
You have Viking blood in you. Is that on a Norse chin? Come on.
Are you denying your whiteness?
I actually use it when it's beneficial. Did I say that?
Get on my face, please.
So you talk to me about how these people are so ignorant, but look at your report cards. You are the stereotype.
What kind of assumptions do you think people see if they see black?
Honestly, fear.
Anthony is someone who is acting.
I don't fit the stereotype.
Fly with me, come on!
He's basically wanting us to finish what he did. I don't know why I like that so much.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring.
I was trying to teach these kids what it means to be black because I don't really know myself.
Yeah, and if you think you have an intimidating question, I dare you to try and be more intimidating than an auditorium full of high school students that Shireen has faced for the past month during Black History Month. Best of luck scaring her. And then next, we have Rob Dyer from Skate for Cancer. So, Rob, you want to give us a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. So, my name's Rob Dyer. I'm from a group called Skate for Cancer. For me, this panel's a little bit different. For the most part, I've kind of been the subject matter of filmmaking. Our story is a story called Skate for Cancer, and when I was 18, I lost my mom to cancer. And from there, we started an organization that focuses on raising money and awareness towards cancer. It's kind of a different side of it for us because, again, like I've been the subject matter, but I've also been involved in the filmmaking process and also filming it myself as well and trying to show our journey. So, what you'll get from me is a little bit of a different side of things, and yeah.
Yeah, wanted to add, Rob, it's so humble. Skate for Cancer is a really interesting case study in terms of NGOs and activism because you've used video storytelling from the very, very, very beginning. So this is a very polished trailer from a recent documentary about Rob's life, but it's really interesting to go back into the history of Skate for Cancer and see some of the fantastic, hilarious videos that you guys used to do.
We used to do a lot of funny, entertaining videos, but when we started, we did skateboard marathons across countries. We've done about 5 different countries now. We skate across America, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, France, and we kind of follow that journey, and that's how we raise awareness and money towards our organization.
Yeah. So this is a clip from the most recent film about Skate for Cancer called Push Forward.
This one is called Dream Love Cure.
This is the Dream Love Cure one.
It's the road to a drop-in center for our organization for kids that have been going through cancer. It's a trailer for it.
Okay.
Skate for Cancer is really important. It's helping fight cancer in such a unique way.
Everyone knows someone who's been affected by this disease, indirectly or directly.
He's doing something that he believes in, and he just does it. You know, he thinks of the impossible, and he just does it.
Our focus, trying to be a support system for people that are affected by cancer.
The world needs people to be crazy and just do things that are meaningful to them and a little bit outside of the box.
And last but not least, we have the lovely Dorothy Engelman from Get Involved and many other great organizations.
Hi, I'm really excited to be here today. I'm a virgin. I have never been to a South By, so treat me gently, if you may. The reason I'm here is because I've been involved in a project for the last 7 years of my life that's kind of transformed me from being a documentary television producer for the first 20 years of my career. Then I started a company about 10 years ago working with NGOs and not-for-profits to help them tell their story and to powerfully, engage as kind of what I would describe as a participant observer in making change. And as the social web started to explode, I wanted to find a way to be more than a pusher of content, which I was as a television producer, and to find a way to engage with audiences. So I created what we then called an integrated program with our public broadcaster in Canada, TVO. We completed 75 short documentaries on innovators, activists, and social entrepreneurs, and we combined it with an online community called getinvolved.ca where you can find a place where you can volunteer your time based on your passion, use your talents, whatever your skills are, and it's a matchmaking service much like a volunteer match, except for the fact that you can tell your story about how you can make a difference and organizations can find you. So the stories that we told were, stories of everything from 7-year-old kids who were trying to raise money to a young man like Ryan Hurljack, who has now created 83,000 wells around the world at the age of 20 by raising money and awareness about the importance of water quality. And the piece I'm going to show you is a piece. It's a little bit outside of the scope of our practice. It's somebody who has a little bit of a celebrity. She was a former Miss World Canada, but she became an activist, and this is her story.
The motto that I learned working with the Red Cross as a global youth educator, he said, "If not now, then when? If not you, then who?" I was midway through recording my music album when I heard of a young girl who was sentenced to death by hanging in Iran for defending herself against 3 rapists. there were so many injustices to the case, and the fact that no media was really picking up the story really angered me. It made me really sad, and I thought, if nobody's going to take the leap, then I'm going to try. The first response I got back was, there's nothing you can do. You're dealing with the Islamic Republic of Iran. There's nothing you can do.
Gün dolandı dalı taşı, dinmiyor gözümü.
And that was when I thought, okay, Nazanin, you're in the right hands. And that was kind of the extra boost I needed when I felt like I was falling apart in Vancouver, and I felt like, am I making a difference here?
Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.
When she walked through those gates of the prison and she was a free woman, she had a life again. I thought, okay, I've done my deed. I've put a year of my life on hold, and we were successful. Literally the next day, I started getting emails and phone calls from other families with children on death row in Iran. I realized that there's not one single organization concentrating on this issue.
When you hear Nazanin speak, she connects with people. She convinces people that their voices matter. She's able to mobilize not just dozens or hundreds, but thousands and thousands of people. We've seen that with some of her initiatives. And that does make a difference, and it can save lives.
If the people who are in the prisons of Iran know that somebody cares about them, that somebody remembers them, and that somebody is trying, that hope can be the difference between life and death.
Many people smile if we work on this.
When you put out seeds, it grows. You know that what you're doing today, helping others, is not just helping that one issue, but it's inspiring other people to know inside them that they have the power to also make change.
So we've seen the more familiar sort of big cultural zeitgeist documentary films in that opening montage, and now you've had a chance to see each of the projects that our panelists are involved in. So our question to you is, what makes films in this genre, if you can call it that, social? What is inherently social about documentary films with an advocacy agenda behind it? And what makes films that stay with you memorable? And what makes films in your life strong enough to inspire you to take action? And if anybody has any personal anecdotes or stories, it would be awesome to hear it, or we can just keep hogging the microphones up here. Oh, come on, guys. Yay! Okay.
Good or bad, that's to be determined ultimately by the outcome.
We've got a mic for you, my friend. There we go.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying that social films are films that want to create change in society. They're artists and entrepreneurs and involve people that see mm-hmm. something and just think to themselves, you know, this isn't right, or something needs to change, and they use the media as a tool to affect that change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you guys want to chime into any of those things in terms of what makes a film social for you?
Yeah, until the mic gets to the next person. I know as a youth worker, one of the biggest struggles I had in moving over to making films was, am I actually doing anything? Like, I'm spending all this money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, to create this media where I could be working with kids one-on-one, and that was a huge question that I wrestled with. So, you know, how powerful or how social are films?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. My name is Brett from Alchemy in San Francisco. We do documentary films for brands, mostly, you know, extremely short documentaries. And one of the things that makes the project social, from our perspective, is that they need to engage, emotionally engage the audience. And you know, as long as you create a story that will be appealing to an audience, you know, they're more apt to send it along and socialize it. So, yeah, I think that the story just has to hit an emotionally engaging element, and then you'll find some really good quality shares there.
Thanks, Brad. And that's a perfect segue to this controversial slide. It would be remiss for us not to mention this elephant in the room on a day like today. I was in the little hotel gym this morning, and the folks from Kony 2012 were on CNN. It's reached over 56 million views on YouTube to this date. That's YouTube alone. They've also distributed the film through Vimeo. Stripping aside the politics of how certain people feel about how this NGO is run, or the actual conflict in northern Uganda, maybe we can break this apart as a case study. And I know Dorothy had some interesting insights into this and how this is quite a good case study as a social film in and of itself.
How many people here have seen Kony 2012?
Yeah, that's pretty incredible for a film that's been
out for 5 days. And did you watch all 27 minutes of it? Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like when we were coming here, and 3 days ago, it was at 55,000 hits on Vimeo, and I sent a note to Megan. I said, this film is everything that we need to talk about, because it just raises every single issue about what is social filmmaking. When you mentioned entertainment and engagement in an emotional sense in terms of social filmmaking, I think of ROE today, and I think, you know, ROE, return on engagement, has got to be emotional, it's got to be entertaining, it's got to be enlightening, and it has to, I think it has to have sort of an experiential quality to it. And this film, I think, has all four of those things, but it also raises all kinds of questions about the filmmaker as point of view, the filmmaker as subject. It raises issues about the fact that when you step out and you say, I want to make a difference, you'll find all kinds of people that want to be in your corner, and you'll find all kinds of people that want to be against you, because you're trying to make change. And I think they were pretty much ready for it. I don't know if you've seen the posting that they've put up on their website, but they've answered, I'm not saying legitimately answered, but you know, it's up to you to decide, but every single criticism that's come at them, they've addressed right away, which brings us to the point of social. So when you get this kind of what must be now $500 million worth of earned media out of what's happened, you have to be ready to be transparent, because in a social world, you know, Don Tapscott, who's speaking in another room, he says, transparency means that you're naked. And if you're naked, you have to be buff. And that's absolutely, like, that's essential. And this film shows that. So I think the controversy around this is such an incredible story, because they have engagement strategies in their film, which is a way to say everyone needs to get involved in this, because it's not enough to push our stuff out anymore. And I think it's a great case study.
Great. So maybe getting to Rob now, what do you think makes the films that Skate for Cancer do, or the most recent documentary in particular, what makes that film social, or the experience of being a Skate for Cancer advocate?
For sure. I would say, well, I think Dorothy does this very well with her her group and her organization is storytelling. For our organization, and again, I can go back to the Kony 2012 video, is I think the most important part of this is storytelling and figuring out who you're telling your story to. For our organization, it's been telling our story to other kids that have been affected by cancer that have gone through a similar situation as myself. So it's helped them almost relate and want to be involved in the same sense as myself. So I would say that would be the most important.
Yeah. And Shireen, what makes Color Me a social film?
Yeah, what was really important for me was what happened after the film was produced and went out to audiences. And so what makes it social for me was the engagement and the conversations that happened as we screened it, and, you know, in every school. So, you know, every time we'd show it to 500 youth and teachers and social workers, the conversations that would happen afterwards. And then even beyond the conversations, we created a study guide, and teachers are now using it to talk to kids about their race, their identity, regardless of their background. And it really just opened the doors for young people to talk about something that maybe they weren't comfortable talking about before. So for me, what's really important is what happens afterwards. And it's a real challenge for filmmakers to be able to gauge that, because it's not something that's necessarily tangible, and you don't know who's talking about your film. We have, you know, a Facebook page and folks following us on Twitter, but even that doesn't really measure. I mean, it measures conversation, but does it really measure impact?
There's an incredibly handsome gentleman here in the fourth row who has a question.
Thanks, Meeks. No, she's not my daughter.
Boyd is my mentor. I got to give Boyd a shout out.
Just a quick question. You've partially answered it. To what extent is the filmmaker responsible for including in the film recommendations for direct action, or to what extent does the filmmaker have responsibility to do what Ms. Barzum just described, which is to take the film and move it to the next level with respect to activism? I think the strength of the Coney film, if there's strength, and I'm on the naysayer's side there with respect to the people, is the fact that at the end of the film, they drive towards specific action. So that's my question. What's your responsibility to do that?
I think it's large. I'll let you guys answer that as well. But I think it's largely how much you're invested in the content and in the message of the film. And in this room here, there are folks that are artists and for hire, and many of us don't have the chance to necessarily create content that we are 100% passionate about, and that, you know, where we have the means and the ability to drive change. But this film, I mean, I did this having a full-time job, and this film was really important to me personally because of the youth that I had worked with before and the challenges that I had seen them encounter. And so for me, I didn't feel like a responsibility. It felt like this is what you want to do. But in respects to, you know, what the kind of responsibility that all filmmakers have, I really believe that whether you're an artist, a music artist, or a filmmaker, or a painter, that if you're going to create something, that you have responsibility for the impact that it bears. And you don't have control over how it morphs and changes, and that's the great thing about how things evolve. But I think you have a responsibility to stand behind the work that you do and communicate why you've done it.
I was just going to say, I think that we're talking about a very evolving role for filmmakers, and I think that the internet and the social web has totally transformed our ability to engage. And sure, you can make a film and not have an engagement strategy or not really go beyond making the film. You can say that you're trying to inspire change or enlighten or, you know, create awareness. And I think that was true 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But now, if you want to get through the clutter of everything that's out there, you have to find a way to have people care about what you're doing, and you have to give them a chance and a set of tools that will allow them to engage. Even The Inconvenient Truth, although Al Gore didn't do it in a big way, at the very end of the film, he had 10 things you can do. You know, it wasn't within the context of the social web, but I think we're seeing the emergence of a kind of engagement on projects that makes it, you know, incredibly challenging for filmmakers, but at the same time, huge opportunity for filmmakers to make real change. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see quite a few hands. This young woman in the red shirt. There we go.
We're age blind. I wanted to hear more about social media and the relationship, all the areas, from promotion to distribution to feedback, mm-hmm. and what are the challenges about that and what are the promises?
Yeah, we can skip ahead to the social media part of this.
Do you want to talk about it? Because your stories and the feedback part.
Sure. Really for ourselves at Scape for Cancer, to do with social media and things like that, we try to make sure everything that we do is, the way we distribute is free. We use the outlets, obvious, YouTube, Vimeo, things like that. For us, again, it's like the way we go about it because we're low budget. We just do things off a whim. It's pretty simple for us. But you guys are a little bit more in depth with you.
But I think, Rob, you talked to me before about the conversation that you have with people, mm-hmm. and that it changes your perspective, that you don't go forward with the idea that this is my story, but it's this idea that it's our story world, I think when you think about it, people talk about transmedia a lot now, and I think that what social media allows you to do is to take your core idea and then engage people to create their own stories within that social media context. So I think the more ability you can, the way that you can engage people to engage with their own storytelling and give them ways and tools and means to do that, whether it's an educational kind of project like Shireen's, or in my case, more of an online experience. I think it's, I mean, I would ask the room here, good examples of engagement strategies, social media strategies that people here are using or employing. I'd love to hear the room in terms of some of the stuff that they've seen that they think is really good examples.
And another Skate for Cancer shout out. Rob is far too humble. Again, they were pioneering the use of MySpace back in the day. You guys had a very strong MySpace presence, and they've been very great at partnering with online communities around the Vans Warped Tour. You guys have been on Vans Warped Tour. You're always plugged into the different communities that each of those bands on the tour had. So I think that we can segue even to talk about partnerships after we talk about this young man in the purple shirt.
Hello, I'm Chris from GSTM. Dorothy, you had asked about some campaigns or stories that are being done in interesting ways. A couple that came to mind here was Remake America from Yahoo News. They're doing some interesting things. UK Knife Violence, I don't know if you saw that campaign. I think it was last year. It's basically choose your own ending. So there are a number of different scenarios, and you could either take a knife or leave the knife. But then if you get into a fight later on, different things can happen. So it's using.
And do you know about the result of that? The case study?
Oh, yeah. It was hugely popular and won a ton of awards. And then finally, the Craftsman Screwed campaign. I don't know if you guys have heard or seen that, but basically they drop all these people, or they drop a particular person who's not very handy after going through a boot camp out into different areas, and the audience has to actually take him through the situation so that he can survive. So it's like Survivor meets something else.
Right.
So it's very sticky, very storytelling. I was just wondering how much you guys use tools like YouTube annotations or things where you can actually let your audience interact and choose where the story goes, essentially.
Well, you've got some examples.
Well, some, not nearly as to that level, because that's genius. But we try to, in our way, we try to get kids to respond with their own videos. And again, a great example is we're going to keep probably bringing this up, the Coney 2012 thing. How many videos came out of that video? How many comments came out of that video? It was really a call to action and a call to response and discussion. So I would say that's the way we do a very similar way. We have a lot of kids that will ask a question at the end of the video and ask for video responses and things like that. But hopefully, we can get the technical help to go crazy like that.
Yeah. Young woman in the second row.
Hi, I'm Terry. I'm a screenwriter from Nashville. I just wanted to know, whenever you're making a movie, how do you draw the line between creating something that is a social film versus creating something that ultimately comes out to be propaganda?
That's a great question. Do you want to field that?
Wow, that's a good one.
That's a big one. I guess the answer to that question starts with how you define propaganda. And maybe not to try and deflect the question, but if I could ask you what you think propaganda is.
Oh, she lost her mic.
It's coming
there
up.
There we go.
Sorry.
Number two.
For me personally, propaganda aims to represent only one side of an issue and completely leaves out any kind of opposing voices or any additional viewpoints for other people. They draw that line somewhere else. If it's, you know, anything they disagree with, it's propaganda. But for me, that's where it is.
And I think Dorothy might have a few things to say on that as well. But I think as filmmakers and as people in general, we always come to creating content subjectively. And it's a big myth to think that, I think, in my opinion, that anyone can be really, truly 100% objective. And so when I made Color Me, I had some very clear ideas in my mind about what I thought existed out there. Of course, I came to the table with an open mind and a lot of things that I thought before creating and producing the film, they definitely did change. But I had a quote-unquote agenda when I made the film. That said, I don't think the film is propaganda, and I actually think that it asks more questions than it answers. But I understand where the question comes from, and it's a very, I think it's a very difficult line to walk, even when your intentions are well placed.
Okay.
Hello? Okay. Hi, my name is Osahan. I'm from Atlanta, Emory University. And one of the problems we see with social media is that it's so touch and go, and it's a microwave society. And you can create a trend, and like Kony 2012 would be big and have 50 million views right now, but what happens 3 months from now? And in the video, there's a clear, distinct call to action, and they use key influencers and use all the social media marketing tools, but at the same time, how do you keep that conversation going, and what would be your call to action to move this forward on each of your individual, and what's your take on it, basically?
Great question.
I'd say 100%. I think that's going to be one of their biggest challenges of that film, is to make sure it's not a flash in the pan, make sure it's not a trend. The influencers that they targeted obviously have followers that are just going to repost because they're, you know, they attack Justin Bieber. So obviously Justin Bieber supporters are going to repost a million times just because they love Justin Bieber. It's fully on the organization to make sure that they respond with something to keep it going, or with something to keep the discussion, to get discussion open. And I don't know. I think the way that they're doing interviews, the way they're responding that way, with really making sure that the United States government is acknowledging it as well, I think that's important. For myself, we're trying to open a drop-in center right now. I think that's our call to action towards kids. We're trying to open a center that helps kids that are going through cancer and give them support and whatnot. So through all our films, that's our objective, that's our goal. And hopefully, yeah, when we do open the center, that's our everything coming forward.
So I guess one thing that we could take from the Escape for Cancer case study is that Rob is the face of that NGO and that cause and that call to action. And Rob has continued sustained conversations online with a variety of supporters and other people in the nonprofit community and cancer advocacy organizations. So I think that maybe that is what can set aside a social film from being a flash in the pan and a one-off. And that is also the strength of a POV-style documentary film, too, because you feel actually invested in that filmmaker as a human being and their cause and their narrative. So maybe, yeah, also in the funds raised also. So did you want to maybe speak to one of your examples?
I think one of the things that I think is that the question's a really good question, and I think that when I look at social filmmaking and sort of engagement strategies, I think of the Wild West. I think of the people that went out panning for gold, and you know, everybody was looking for what was the mercurial formula that was going to get them the gold. And I think that's kind of where we're all at right now. I don't think there are very clear answers about it. But I can tell you from my own experience, I run a business. I use all the excess capacity of my business to make social films for not-for-profit organizations. And basically, Get Involved has been kind of my social enterprise. It's my charity of my company. I've been working on it for 7 years, and it's exhausting and it's tiring to try to keep these things going. It's hard work. So, you know, you have to have people with a lot of passion. I mean, Kony 2012, he's been working on this for 7 years. So when you say flash in the pan, it's his 15 minutes of fame maybe, but it's not a flash in the pan. He's been working on this for a long time, and I'm assuming he's going to continue. So I think that, you know, you have to know going into making a film, a social film, and trying to engage an audience that it's hard. It's hard, hard, hard work, and you've got to be totally committed to it. And it'll swallow you up, and it'll take all your energy, which is why you need partners. We talked about partners, and I have amazing partners. I work with Volunteer Canada, and I work with TVO, an amazing public broadcaster. I have, you know, friends, family, everybody. Katie, we all work on this together. You got to gather your forces, gather your friends, and you got to go forward with it. So that's my take on it.
Do you want to, maybe Shereen can speak to how Anthony McLean as a main character also is part of the engagement process, and he goes with you on many of the screenings, and he's a fantastic public speaker.
Yeah, before I do that, I just if I could play devil's advocate for a moment, a lot of us like to put the onus on the media makers and the responsibility. But I actually think that the responsibility lies in the hands of the consumer of media, and so it's great to make sure, you know, to emphasize the responsibility of filmmakers and activists, but at the same time, you know, we're making this so that people consume it and then do something about it. And I know I'm guilty of this, of watching many a short film or documentary or reading something in the paper and then being really moved with emotion and so sad, and I'm crying, and then nothing. And so I think a lot of the responsibility in large part lies in the hands of all of us. You know, what are you going to do with what you've just seen? And then to touch on Anthony McLean, who is the main character of the film, who's actually the gentleman who's struggling with his own identity and racial issues, we have a great partnership where he's agreed to basically travel with the film. And time again, even though he's shared his life and been really vulnerable on the film, he does it again in front of audiences every time we go. And it's really hard for him, and it's amazing how many times I've seen him squirm, even though he's presented to, you know, now tens of thousands of people. But having a really good relationship with your subject matter, I think, is really important as well.
This young man with the lovely hat has been waiting patiently for a long time, so please go ahead.
Thanks for the compliment. My name is Aaron Bramley. I'm the Director of Communications and Education for Lights, Camera, Help, and we are a film festival here in Austin, Texas that focuses exclusively on cause-driven film. And so I've seen thousands and thousands of films and calls to action. And my question for you guys is also about call to action, but it's in sort of the short form. And what I'm wondering from you is, in that short form, that sort of PSA, 2.5 minute or under, what do you think essentially butters up your audience so they're ready and susceptible to a call to action? Is it humor? Is it crying puppies? Or is it babies with distended bellies? You know, what is it that you guys think is really effective?
It's funny because we've tried a lot of those for our organizations. We even put kittens in a breast examination video because we hoped that would, and it did actually. It got like a crazy amount of views on YouTube. I think for as an organization, I think it's you know, we felt bad about that in a way. We felt that, man, it sucks that we have to, in a way, throw something else into this video to get our message across. But yeah, I think it's all within how comfortable you feel as well too. But yeah,
you know, it's within the context of the culture that we're in. You know, Coney 2012, I'm sorry I keep bringing it up, but what did he do? He used celebrity, because celebrity is unfortunately where everybody's attention is focused. And, you know, in a certain way, Anthony's your celebrity too. And the 75 people that I've profiled in my stories are the celebrities of the stories as well. But, you know, we're human beings. We relate to human beings and cute kittens too. But I think that's important. So that's about casting. That's about finding the right story, finding the right person. I think that it's one of the things that I would say to any young filmmaker is research, 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 and find the right people to tell the story. So the person who's authentic, the person who has passion, the person who's going to carry on their cause, that authenticity resonates with people when they're watching things. And the more authentic it is, I think the more successful it will be.
I would add to that as well. The question was asked before, how do you draw the line between activism and propaganda? And I also ask, where do you draw the line between storytelling and advertising? And I think when you're making a film, short, long feature, one of the biggest things I have in the forefront of my mind is, am I manipulating my audience? And short PSAs can often do that, play on the heartstrings of the emotional reaction of your audience. And I think we actually do a disservice to the subject matter when we do that. I know that there's so much space for creating this emotional drive and climax, and you have to do that as a filmmaker, but at the same time, really respecting your audience and where they are, where they're at in grappling with whatever issue you're discussing is really important to me. So not to play with your audience's emotions.
I think that's a fantastic question, too, because I wanted to just highlight your reference to humor. And an NGO that I've worked with in a past life, not in a metaphysical sense, but like actually in a previous career, was War Child. And they use humor in such a wonderful way to really evoke, just to break down people's blasé attitudes towards war zones and the Third World. So I'd encourage people to look up their Help Child Soldiers campaign. It's the perfect sort of reverse psychology approach to getting people to think about helping prevent child soldiers by making fake PSAs for child soldiers. I hope that makes sense how I described it. And we did a blogger relations campaign that complemented the video, and we actually sent out boxes to influencers, empty boxes, asking them to donate knives to help child soldiers. And it's just that sort of off-putting, quirky black humor approach sometimes that you absolutely need to break down people's desensitized approach to these social causes. There's a man at the very back, and he's so patient, and he's got a flannel shirt. Oh, okay, we've got somebody here. Let's go here. Just because she's 17 doesn't mean she doesn't get audio. Here we go. Oh, no.
Hello.
Yay.
Hi. Okay. I'm 17 years old, and so I feel like I represent the teen population. It's actually, this is going off on a point that someone in the second row had mentioned, and whether it be propaganda or advertisements or just a really effective personal video, which I believe Kony 2012 was exactly that, I think I'm a perfect victim of what went down. I watched it. I was totally moved. I'm like, mom and dad, that was sick. But then nothing else really ensued. So I guess my question is, when I see a video, when I see social media in action, when I see it driving a change, even if it's propaganda, anything, when I see something that moves me, what exactly is the result? What happens? What do I, like... All of a sudden it's no longer awareness, but it becomes my responsibility to do something when I see social media. So,
okay. Can I say something?
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the opposite. I love that. I love that organization. I think that video. What was the purpose of that video? It was to make Kony famous. And I guarantee you, he was the most talked about person in the world this week. And so I think they did. Reach their goal, and I think that was the purpose of the video. What happens now, I don't know. We don't know, but I think they did. 13-year-old to 25-year-olds around the world who never knew who this man was, never knew about what was going on in Africa, are at least somewhat talking about it. Who knows if they're talking about it in the right manner, but they're talking about it, and I think that was the most important thing that came out of that film.
I would also encourage you and anyone else, everyone in this room, including myself, I'm a big sucker for anything where people are hurting, essentially. And I wanna do everything about everything. You know, I wanna just take up arms and do everything about everything. But you can't, you know, and you can't do everything about everything. And so maybe pick one thing that really moves you. And find a creative way to get involved in a small way. And that's okay. That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be much bigger than that.
Maybe before we take the next question, we could talk briefly about partnerships. So I'd like Rob to maybe touch on some of the amazing partners that he's worked with and the different collaborative relationships. I mentioned Warp Tour earlier, but any other arrangements that you've made to get your documentary out there?
To get our organization out there and our documentary out there, it's a big part of it's been partnerships for us. Obviously, starting in the skateboarding community, that was a huge part of getting our organization out there and our documentaries out there. But from there, we've moved a lot, like Invisible Children, we moved a lot into the music scene. We moved a lot into the pop culture scene, which has definitely helped us a lot, getting our word out there, getting our message out there, getting our films out there. I think partnerships in whatever you do in life is really important, and it's helped us a lot.
Yeah. I think Dorothy mentioned some partners earlier.
Well, the one thing I think I would say about partnerships is that, especially when you're trying to work in a social space, there are people that have way more experience than you do. And it's a great way to get engaged with the subject. Find the organizations that are doing work in your field, and that's part of the research. Find out what they're doing. Find like-minded people. Once you find those like-minded people, it can start you to figure out your strategy for how you want to move forward with your campaign. And the other piece of advice I would give you is that you're going to come up against resistant groups, people that don't want to join your forces. I say move on and go to the next person, because the biggest mistake that I've made is sometimes trying to engage with certain organizations that, you know, they kind of get territorial. And, you know, I'm not an experienced NGO, or I don't run an NGO, but I have respect for all those people that do. It's my job to help them tell their stories. It's my job to help them get their message out. But, you know, when you're thinking about partnerships, find like-minded people, and you'll keep your optimism and your skepticism will be low and your optimism will be high, because you need lots of energy, lots of positive energy.
Just to add to that, partnerships for me started right from the beginning, from the research stage. Sometimes filmmakers tack partnerships on the end when they want to get the film out. But I reached out to community organizations early on, and they actually helped shape my story. So partnerships started for me from concept right down through distribution.
Perfect segue. I was just going to say, and the great thing about taking that approach is that then they take ownership and they are engaged with your project. They believe in your project. They feel part of your project.
Yeah. I just want to be cognizant of the time. We've got 10 minutes left. So maybe we could speak very briefly to distribution and then ROI, and then we'll go back to the question style, if that's okay with everybody. Do you want to tackle distribution, Dorothy? No.
I come from a very traditional model, being a television broadcaster, so distribution was, you know, big TV broadcasters. And at least in Canada, what's happening now is that films that are long format are increasingly, there's no place to show them, and, you know, it's dying, and it's being driven by distribution through alternate channels, most of them social. And, you know, all of the studies show that people stop watching at 2 minutes, and of course that's been proven wrong this week, which I think is really fantastic. But I think that the distribution reality now for everybody is that you need multiple players, multiple platforms, and you've got to find really smart engagement strategies to take advantage of them.
For me, distribution tied in 100% with partnerships. And so we did get a broadcaster to commission the film, but the audience for that broadcaster was quite small. And for me, I wanted it to actually reach the people that I had made it about, young people specifically. And so I just made a beeline for all the school boards that I could connect with. And we just ended up showing it in school after school after school. And so without those partnerships, I wouldn't have an audience.
Mm-hmm. It really is about knowing your audience. Now, Rob, where do you think people are accessing your films the most? It's mostly online.
Yeah.
And they're referred to you by Twitter or Facebook?
Yeah, we're the most simplest. We just put it online. We're very, and I think that's the most effective for what our goal is, because for us as an organization, our goal is to reach as many people as possible. And online is obviously that platform to do so.
Now, this young woman over here.
My name is Leah, and I'm with the PBS NewsHour. We run a program called Student Reporting Labs, where we go into schools around the country and we have them start a video production curriculum that we've developed. And I'm wondering if you have kind of storytelling secrets or moments that you think would be really effective in our curriculum to help those students, you know, take they're out their reporting and then they come back with their interviews, but then to shape it into something that's really effective.
That's great.
I worked on a Nickelodeon series called Short Films by Short People, and we worked with grade 6 classrooms to help them tell stories. And I thought the most instructive thing that we did was we actually just talked about what is a story, and the idea of theme which, believe it or not, most of the kids didn't get because they, you know, I'd say to them, so what is, you know, we talked about Star Wars or E.T., what is E.T. about? And they didn't understand that the theme of Star Wars or E.T. in this particular case was friendship. So we started talking about ideas and concepts and what they wanted to talk about. So I think sometimes the most basic piece, which is what is storytelling, and breaking down storytelling into theme and character, I think that's a very powerful tool.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Rohan Jayasekara from Index on Censorship in London. I'm just interested in the role of partners in getting them engaged in promotions. Are they your key influences, or can they put you in touch with key influences?
So the question was, are partners considered key influencers in the arrangement for distribution? I don't know.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it depends on what your cause is. It's not about necessarily 55 million viewers. It's about the right 55 viewers or the right 5,500 viewers. So that's what I meant about research and partnering very early on, finding the people that are really making movement in the thing that you care about. And in the case of, in your case, reaching students being very powerful. In the case of Rob's, you know, he's got a very specific audience. In the case of my audience is really, I'm trying to say to people, use your time, use your talent, change the world. So in some ways, it's a very broad audience. But you know, I'm fighting away with my partners, trying to get that message out to as many people as we can.
And just to once more refer to the Coney 2012 example, the filmmaker, I think, used, you know, the idea of reaching out to culture makers and policy changers. He spelled that out really clearly. That's what his intention was, and that's what we all do on a smaller scale.
Yeah, and just to sort of echo what Dorothy said, you know, 55 million or 55, it's really about reaching people that need to see your film, and that gets back to how do you determine ROI on your project? How do you know that you've had a successful social film? Any of you want to field that beyond eyeballs?
I guess it sort of combines all the questions we've talked about, because all of us are looking for ways to entertain, to engage, to enlighten, and to give people an experience. And I think we're using all these new tools. We're trying to figure out how we can do that. And for me, those things are not so easy to measure. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges. We used to always look at the ratings. The Nielsen ratings used to drive every decision making, that, you know, all the decisions that were made in television. And we don't have clear measurables anymore about how successful we are with what we do. And I think it's kind of part of your process that you need to go through as a filmmaker before you start. Think about those four components. What are you looking for? What kind of impact do you want to make? Who are the partners you can make it with? So that you have a benchmark to hit. Because that's a big mistake I made. I thought if you build it, they will come, you know, and it's just there's too much clutter out there. You've got to kind of know what you're doing before you get started a little bit.
Do you want to unpack that a bit, actually? Because I think that the original Get Involved is a really interesting case study in learning about online behavior and getting people to your site.
Well, it's just that I was a naive television producer, and I thought, I'm going to tell 75 great stories. I'm going to build a website, create a community. People that care about making change are all going to come to the community. They'll all start talking, and it'll happen. And, you know, I got crushed. I got crushed so fast, and then all of a sudden I had to go and find out about all kinds of things I knew nothing about building social communities. And this was in 2007 when these things were just emerging, and I'm still muddling my way through it. But we now have the largest, you know, sort of listing of volunteer opportunities in Canada, and we have this community that kind of grew out of the need of the community, not what I thought it should be. But you have to be responsive to that. And what people wanted was, they wanted to know where they could volunteer, and organizations wanted to know where they could find volunteers. And so that's how the site transformed from being kind of like, well, I'm going to put up some articles, and I'm going to have some videos, and everyone can talk, and everyone will make change. And so it's evolved quite dramatically as a result of my partnerships and as a result of having a conversation with the audience and the people that wanted to use the tool.
Last question, no pressure.
Now you put the pressure on.
You're going to be great.
One quick note about Coney that was really fascinating to me was that he brought up an ethics problem, and he put us all on a a level playing field by bringing in the first 10 minutes his son. He made everyone in this room irrelevant because we've all been that, and we all realized that a 4-year-old child could understand the ethical problem of oppressing children, and he just expanded his audience incredibly by having a 4-year-old make sense of that. And if a 4-year-old can make sense of that, anyone can make sense of that. And so it almost like, how can't we do something if a 4-year-old can understand this? So that was really amazing to me, and I thought he did a great job of building his audience that way. But what would you say if we're supposed to be encouraging action from our films? What would you say would be the strengths and weaknesses of potentially handing over the story after we tell the first chapter to the audience?
I think that's the greatest thing you can do. Yeah. I think that's kind of what's also strange about the old world of broadcasting. It was all about ownership, and it was about copyright, and all of those rules are changing, and none of us are really sure how it's all going to evolve. I think it's the most exciting thing in the world. I'm 51 years old. When I started working in television when I was 17, I never imagined that this kind of democratization, citizenship journalism, the idea that we could all exchange ideas, that 55 million people could watch the same thing at the same time. You know, these things are incredible. I mean, it's incredibly powerful to share and to exchange and to be transparent. I think it's what makes filmmaking really, really exciting right now.
I think you nailed it on the head of what we need to be doing. I think it's so important to let something after you create it go, and wherever it goes, whatever change it may do. I guarantee you, when they first made Kony 2012, they weren't thinking that they would receive this sort of discussion of the issue. I think they were just hoping that, you know, the call to action would happen. But I think it's important for the organization and for the people that created it to let it go, let it do its course it's supposed to do in society.
I also think that we're really privileged in this day and age to all be storytellers in our own right. Years ago, I mean, hundreds maybe of years ago, there were designated storytellers in villages, and now all of us are to a certain extent. So I think it's a really big privilege.
And on that note, thank you for your time, and please be nice to the volunteers. This festival couldn't happen without the volunteers. Let's get a round of applause for them.
Thank you.